Hello, this is Sahar. I hope you enjoy listening to this podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Soul Talk, my first episode on Bridges of Light. And thank you for watching. Tonight, as my first guest, is a healer and shaman, Dawn Paul. Hi, Dawn.
Hi, darling. Harris. Thank you for inviting me to talk to you today.
Not at all. It's my pleasure. I owe you so much, all of you, my support group. And I'm delighted that you've accepted and you are live on Bridges of Light. And I know that Gaetano will be watching later. So thank you, Gaetano, very, very much.
Yes, thank you for the invitation.
For the viewers who joined us now, I would like to tell you a little bit about Dawn. I've met Dawn, what is it, Dawn, now? About 20 years ago?
Around there, yes.
And actually, it was Andrew who met you first at a lunch with friends. And he came back saying, you must meet Dawn, you must meet Dawn. And we had a very special link because Sahar and Dawn mean exactly the same thing. So Sahar is an Arabic word and the equivalent is Dawn. And by the way, it is also the time when you start your fasting in Ramadan. So to all our viewers who are observing the holy month, the holy fasting month of Ramadan, we wish you a happy Ramadan, Ramadan Kareem. So that's the connection, Dawn, and we're doing this during the holy month. And you have two Dawns.
Bringers of Light.
Dawn is a shaman. She's also a healer of souls. Her first book by the same title, A Healer of Souls, was published in 2012. Her intention was to provide a helping hand for her readers on how to face their life, how to get out of the mess that they find themselves in. More importantly, how to build, as she says, a new reality for themselves. And this is what we're going to talk about today. What is reality from the personality point of view? And I just want to clarify, Dawn, in my definition, what I call personality is the person who is incarnate in this body, in this lifetime. So I call that the personality. And the rest of the consciousness, which is out of the body, we can call it the soul, or we can call it the rest of the consciousness. Do you agree with that, or do you have different definitions?
Yeah, that's fine. Fine.
Okay. So Dawn also completed Dr. Alberto Veludo's healing, the Light Body School. She trained with the Four Winds Society. She also had further training in Peru. She visited the Amazon, the Sacred Valley, the Machu Picchu Mountain. And she also learned from Jose Luis Herrera of the Rainbow Jaguar. Now, all of that might sound exotic to people who don't know about shamanism, but we will talk about it in a few minutes. I also wanted to tell you that she completed the medicine wheel, the inner child training with Carla Fox, and many others on the path, including many shamans, but particularly the Kiro shamans, which come from the sacred mountains in Peru. She also went to California. She did Theta healing. Dawn then went on and studied emotional freedom technique and quantum touch. She also did Sufism with Sheikh Burhanuddin in Spain. But her background, interestingly enough, is in the financial world. She worked in banking and she was a consultant in business, specializing in corporate pensions. So Dawn, that was a big leap from the city to shamanism.
Yeah.
Can you tell our viewers, how did you stumble upon it? How did it happen?
I don't know if I stumbled upon it or it stumbled upon me. I think I've been looking for something from a very, very young age, but had no idea what it was. I think about at age 16, I was on the spiritual search. And of course, then that's quite long ago now. And so it was quite underground and took me a very long time. Ended up working in finance for probably over 20 years, but I was very, very unhappy because I knew I was supposed to be doing something special, yes, you know, something different. I spent an awful lot of time on an awful lot of courses, studying an awful lot of things, looking at a reading lunatic, basically. I mean, it was just, you know, I had piles of books by my bed and I was going through them and I was praying, please, please let me find my things. And I think it took something like 25, 28 years to find shamanism. And I didn't even find it. I think in the end, I just got so angry and I threw everything out of the house, all the books, the coursework, the crystals, really? Everything. everything. I went on holiday to Peru, and when I was at Peru, then I had a vision at Machu Picchu that told me to follow this path. So in the end, it's sort of...
But you went, you went there on holiday, right? You weren't like looking for anything. You went to Peru on holiday.
I was angry.
I remember the story you told me. You were coming down and then suddenly you saw something and you weren't sure whether this was real or not or imagined.
Yes, I came down from kind of the highest point and there was...
I just want to say a couple of hellos. Hello to Nick from Dubai and hello Stewart Pierce. I'm very glad you're watching. And yes, let's talk about Akhenaten. He's a dear relative.
I've seen a comment from Stewart actually about Akhenaten and Nefertiti. So that, we have... interesting things to talk about. So so basically I came down from the highest point of Machu Picchu. I could see all of these Inca around me. I was really angry because I thought there were people dressed up, you know, that you have your photograph with, like in Rome, the gladiators, that sort of thing.
So you thought it was like a touristic thing, and this tribe went up to meet you?
How could they do this in such a sacred place? I was so angry. And then I noticed that the Inca, they were kind of, it's about 20 of them staring at me, that they started to fade in and out. And only two were left. There was one completely covered in gold armor. And then another what I presume is a normal dress. And it was very scary. I didn't know who they were. At one point I thought I was dreaming, you know, I was looking for my quilt. And they basically told me to follow this path and that they would help me. And that was 16 years ago this year. And I've been working worldwide as a shaman since then. Not an easy path, as anybody on it will know, but I love it.
I don't know if you want to talk about it, but I remember when you told me the story, you said that one of them was like an energy figure and that energy kind of upped and then went inside you?
One of them was kind of, I think, the energy itself of Machu Picchu. The Apu, as we call it, the holy mountain spirit. The other one that looked kind of normal, it grabbed me by the throat and took something from my throat and threw it down into the river valley. And then basically just told me to go down the stairs and said, you know, you've got what you came for.
Wow.
So I
remember when we had a session and, you know, at some point, like, you know, I closed my eyes. And then when we were done, you said, you know, how did it go? And I remember telling you, yeah, I kind of felt it when you blew onto my face. And you said, I blew onto your face. And I'm like, okay. But it just felt to me like you have close energies or guides who work closely with you.
Yeah, that's really the point of being a shaman. So it's about being the conduit, the clear, the conduit between heaven and earth, the spirit world and this world, and allowing spirit to work through you. So when I'm working with clients and I'm talking to clients, I never really feel that it's me talking. You know, it's almost like they're talking through me and information comes in and I can get it out. And that's really, you know, we work with the mountain spirits. The mountain spirits work through me and they are, I'm a conduit for them. So effectively they are doing the work as well as me helping people with obviously the information and the guidance that I have. Does that make sense?
But isn't that true of all healers or light workers?
Yeah.
That we are just the vessel, really. You know, whatever it is that you do, whatever kind of healing and spirit or energy or whatever, or the source, whatever you want to call it, works through us. But isn't that also true that this is why we need to kind of check ourselves and make sure that our vessel is clean, clear of any drama, trauma, grounded, work with integrity, because whatever you channel, the quality of whatever you channel will be affected by the quality of the vehicle itself.
Absolutely. So I remember having a client, mentioning to a client once that I have a dear friend in France and she helps, you know, work work done. And I remember this client saying, well, you have work done, and really surprised. And I said, well, I'm always working on myself, because I can only take my clients to my frequency.
As far as you are, absolutely.
As far as I can get, that's as far as I can take them. So it's my duty to continue to work on myself and to clear and to cleanse everything else, to try and get higher and higher so that they can get higher and higher. Else we're not developing. I'm only going to get people to a certain point. Yeah.
So I explained that. I explained earlier in a short live video that I did earlier about healing, that we, every living being has an energy. We are, as human beings, electromagnetic beings. So we do have an energy, and anything that we go through gets kind of registered or stored as memory in our energy field, good or bad. But if it is bad, in the sense that if it's a trauma or a negative event or incident, if that memory is not, if that event is not dealt with, if you like, then the memory registered and eventually filters into the physical body. So healing is all about clearing that energy, whatever form of healing that you follow. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, so the shaman in Peru there will say that, you know, disease starts in the energy field.
So absolutely.
You can, if you know, if it's lung disease, for example, you can, I've had somebody, it's in my family, I've had a shaman in the jungle take it out of my energy field before it even reached the physical.
Yes.
But there's kind of a few different things. So if we have trauma, it can register in the energy field. It can block a chakra, for example. It can put what we call an imprint in the energy field as well, that acts as like a magnet to bring similar experiences to us that we probably don't want. And then also we can create...
Can I interrupt you there? So for viewers who don't know, if you've got any kind of, what shall we call it, impurity or a block, because everything in the universe is resonance, you know, we say as within, as without. So if your energy is interrupted or distorted, what will manifest in your life will also be distorted and blocked. You'll experience struggle. So can I ask you, what kind of issues do you deal with? I looked at your website, and the first thing that you mentioned on your website is you deserve to live a life you love. Do you think we suffer because of lack of self-love? Is that the root cause of our problems?
I actually think it's a root cause of every problem, because obviously, as I said before, I've been doing this about 16 years, and it doesn't really matter what has happened to people. The actual issue becomes what that person then does to themselves. So how they stop themselves from growing, from healing, from taking part in life, from joining in, from having the life that they want. You know, trauma happens as a child. Beliefs are created, blocks are created. And it's almost like that's the sunshine life, that's the sunny world, or the rainbow world, as I call it, that people want to be in, but they're caught in the dark world, and they're looking at it thinking that they can't have it. And I perceive my job as clearing them from the darkness and from all of the things that keep them in the darkness, so they can open the gates and go into this world of light. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think we can help as much as we can. But I think also what I do, for example, with my clients is I help them realize that they must hold themselves accountable, because you can have all the healing that you want. But unless you make an effort to come out of that maze, unless you make an effort to see the world differently, or perhaps to understand that we all go through hard times, it is how you respond to your situation that makes the difference.
Which is a Buddhist principle, isn't it? It's not what happens to
you.
Yeah.
It's how you react.
Major one. Yeah. And I spend most of my teaching Buddhist principles. So it's not what happens to you. If this is you, and then you have some conflict come, you know, we don't normally think, and we just react. Oh my God. Yeah. It's the Buddhist teaches that this is the only freedom, not this, whatever this is, whatever this conflict is. It's about knowing that in that split second you have a choice as to how to react, and you can go into your old ways, which is, oh my God, you know, or you can kind of go, oh, that's interesting, what do I have to learn from this? And I think, you know, we've been talking a lot, obviously, and it is about taking the soul's view. I think I've got something actually here. We have this. This is from Peru. I don't know if you can see it. It's a serpent.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah, with a jaguar on the back.
Oh, yes.
And an eagle on top of that. So the serpent, it's three states of perspective. So the serpent represents the ego mind, you know, the base needs, food, water, fear, obviously. Then we've got this, the jaguar is the emotional self, and the eagle is, or the condor, is the higher self, the soul, yes?
Right.
So if you think about the serpent and the jaguar, they're on the earth. The serpent's very low down, can hardly see anything. The jaguar can see the bushes and the mountains in the distance, but the eagle lifts up and it sees the whole thing from a completely different vantage
point. Fantastic. Like literally a bird's eye view, yes.
So my job is to get people out of the emotional state that they get locked into and try and get them to see whatever's happened to them, whether it's childhood abuse, sexual abuse, soldiers, PTSD, that sort of thing, to try and see from this point of view and to understand effectively that we are all eternal beings. There isn't really no birth, no death. It's just a constant change of experience. Does that make
sense? And whatever is happening is not personal. It is what we need to overcome or develop so that we don't react in the same way.
That's it.
I think this is the growth happens outside the comfort zone, doesn't it?
Yes, well, we should always, there's a saying that we should always be feeling uncomfortable, slightly anxious, because that's the sign that we are.
This is when we grow, yes.
This is how we grow. And I think the biggest issue I have overall with clients is that they find a comfort zone and they stay in it. It might be hugely uncomfortable. I think a comfort zone is a ridiculous word for it, because it's not comfortable at all half the time. It's more about a known zone. You know, they know that state.
It's more of a cocoon. You know, we had a guest yesterday on Bridges of Light, and she was talking about William James, that he said that are three stages of spiritual development, like the butterfly. So the cocoon you think is comfortable, but it's actually a prison because it's limited. And then eventually you get frustrated, and you know, it's a period of transformation too. So even when you feel stuck, that could be the time when we decide to make changes. That is the transformational time. I just wanted to say, like, you know, it's not the end of the world if you're going through a problem, because that gives you the rich material to transform your life.
Absolutely. And I think what people don't understand is they want to try and get from where they are to where they want to be without too much problem. So what I always say to them is that the caterpillar doesn't just go in the cocoon and sprout some legs and some antennae and some beautiful wings and pop out and fly off. It gets absolutely mulched. It gets actually turned into black liquid.
Yes.
So there's nothing left of the original form. Yeah. And then from that,
that's amazing.
The butterfly is formed, and in the struggle as well to get out of the cocoon, because they don't just pop out of the cocoon. They have to spend a long time trying to get out, and there are people that have tried to, you know, help them a little bit, you know, to maybe cut the cocoon a little bit, and the butterfly just plops out onto the floor and dies, because it's the struggle to get out of the cocoon that makes the wings strong enough for flight.
That's amazing. So it's like literally a labor of love, and the end result possibly equals the labor pains. I don't know.
Yes, yes.
I try and be positive, you know, because when something hits you, and when I first started, I used to call it karmic balls, you know, like karma in the sense that whatever decision you make, because every action has an equal and opposite reaction.
Yes.
So if you've done something and you've gone on unaware, there will be something at some point, you know, that hits you, and you have to face it. And you have to deal with it, but it isn't really personal. In the little things, we can deal with that. But maybe in the bigger things, you know, like death of loved one or developing cancer or something, we react to it in a very big way, because it's really shocking and we take it personally. And this is where you mention like a little bit of the soul kind of leaves the body. Can you tell us what is soul retrieval, and when does it happen, or what causes it?
Okay, so soul retrieval is the healing process. It's soul loss that occurs after trauma, any form of trauma. It normally occurs between the ages of 0 and 10, and then it starts mm-hmm. up a recurring pattern of similar experience. So it normally starts when we have that realization that when you're a kid and you're jumping off the stairs and you're climbing in trees and everything's yes. more. And all of a sudden something happens. It could be you have a big accident, end up in hospital, or mum dies or grandpa dies or something, kind of makes you go, oh. And the best way to describe it, and it's not very nice, so forgive me, but if you read in the newspaper about somebody that's been raped, they will report that they came out of their body and they looked down upon the act happening to them, but they weren't in the body at the time. And so if you imagine that the body is like an orange, the physical body is like the skin of the orange, and the soul is like the segments of the orange. Does that make right. sense? Yeah. So imagine yeah. a horrible thing happens, and the segments, they all come out of the orange, and that's to allow the person to get through the experience. But let's say 10 segments come out, but 10 segments don't go back in afterwards. So maybe so, only...
Hold on. So do they leave when bits of consciousness or bits of soul leave? Is that to make us less sensitive so we don't yeah. get even more traumatized? So it's a form of protection.
It's a form of protection.
Okay.
Yeah. Because the soul is fragile and the soul knows it. And the soul is always in and out of the body. I mean, we go out of our bodies at night in dream state. Yes. So,
right.
So it's important that, so the person needs to be less than, yes, immediately after the event and maybe for some months afterwards. And the idea is then they get proper healing.
Yes.
Proper healing. Yes. And that historically, that healing would have been shamanic healing. Yes. So
human... are you basically saying that when bits of the soul leave due to a traumatic event, we actually have less energy in our physical bodies, and that in itself might cause problems?
The juiciness, the yes. energy, and also the personality. So I think you've probably, hi Elizabeth, I think you've probably seen people and you can see that they're not quite there. They're not fully... Wow. present.
Yeah, they're almost like I wanted to say traumatized. They are traumatized, but they're almost like absent-minded,
yeah. And so this is so they think they can get through the period of trauma and heal from it, and then it's necessary to go and get those healed. We go and heal the soul, and then we go and get the healed soul part back, and we put that in the body along with gifts and resources that then help the person to move forward,
which are symbolic. So as energy, it's expressed as symbols that might help the person a little bit extra yeah. help, if you like.
Yes.
It's like when you put all these like high technology oils in your engine, like at the gas station, they keep telling me, oh, you need this, can we put this engine oil? I'm like, okay, so that the car can run better. So you retrieve the soul or bits of the soul that are missing, and sometimes also bring gifts to kind of sweeten the deal so that the soul stays in. Is that what you're saying?
The person needs to be kind of moving forward in a new way to help the soul part stay in, but the gifts help the person move forward. So it gives them resource, okay. support.
I understand.
And we also bring power animals in as well, just to help them, because this is a kind of a healing modality that doesn't form dependency. So you're giving people gifts and resources that they can use themselves.
Okay, yeah. I want to interrupt you and move on to another thing that you have on your website, which really attracted my attention. I quote, you said, a shaman needs to understand what a client experiences during illness or trauma. He or she need to be very strong and unafraid of death, as shamanic training often involves facing or interacting with death. Being a shaman is a dangerous occupation, And shaman cannot be afraid of death. But you experienced death at the age of 8, didn't you?
So
is it really dangerous being a shaman? I mean,
yeah, it's not good.
It's intriguing, but yeah.
Yeah, it's very, you know, you have a lot of power, I mean, I've been trained since being a child. Everything that's happened to me, and you know what's happened to me, I'm happy to share. I went through the menopause at between 13 and 17, because normally you don't get to be a shaman until you're postmenopausal. Didn't realize that
that's
at the
interesting.
Time. Lots and lots of illness. Lots of suffering, lots of loss, lots of illness in my family with my father and my brother, and obviously myself, you know, keeping myself going. And I died at 8 on the operating table with my appendix burst. But it was it was the kind of strangest thing. It was like being a pair of eyes in the corner of the room, but up by the ceiling, looking down, and I could see a body on the table. I could see the doctors and the nurses all running around.
Wow.
And it took me ages to realize.
You have a wow.
On the
you
table.
You have all these comments. Yeah. Don't forget to look at that, our viewers' comments. You've got a wow and very intriguing. So was that like a near-death experience?
I think it was a death experience. Like, there was no.
It was a death experience.
You know, I think when I realized the body was mine, there was zero emotion. You would think I would have gone, you know, but it was just like, oh, yeah. And then they tipped my body upside down to try and get the acid out of my body.
So you were watching. So you were literally out of body.
Thing. It was like watching a television program.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh.
Amazing.
You know? But there was no emotion whatsoever. And then the next thing I knew, I was just waking up in the bed, and the doctor came to me and he said, have you got any questions? And I went, oh yes. And why did you tip me upside down? And he kind of went, and he ran off. He ran out the ward, you know. And I've had, you know, lots of
Okay, Dawn, let me just welcome our new viewers. Please let us know where you're watching from. We're talking to Dawn Paul, who's a healer of souls and a shaman. So we've discussed what the soul is. We've discussed why the soul leaves the body when we go through a trauma. And we're talking about literally death, because a lot of shamanic work involves death, and that a shaman must not be afraid of death. And Dawn was just telling us about her death experience when she was 8 years old, how she watched herself or watched being operated on, didn't you? That's what we were talking about.
But really, in a different context, shamanic healing is all about death and rebirth. So if I get a client, like we talked about, you know, the caterpillar going into the cocoon, it dies to its old self.
Yes.
And then it is reborn. So the whole of shamanic healing is all about the death first and then rebirth. Death of the old, all the old ways, all the old being, you know, the things that, you know, we hold on to, the comfort zones, everything else, and then the birth of the self that can go and claim that rainbow life. I always say to clients, you know, if you're an artist, you have a blank canvas and you have all the colors.
You can start painting or creating a new life.
Yes.
Yeah. It's really, for me, you know, with my recent experience, it's really been like the darkest hour is the one before dawn. Because it has been very dark, and I was just sitting in the garden, and I told this to Gaetano, and you know, everything was dying, everything was brown, and then suddenly about 2-3 weeks ago, I looked around and everything is being born, and it suddenly hit me that even in nature, death is necessary for rebirth. So it's part of the transformation, and that kind of helped me see that, you know, death is not the end of it all, but it's a new beginning on a different level.
Yeah, I mean, in my mind, there is no death. There's a, you know, the person leaves the physical realm, but we aren't these bodies. And this is part of the teaching. For example, may I use you and the Andrew experience?
Yes, absolutely.
You know, the conversation.
Yes.
So talking about moving from the emotional state to the soul perspective, the bigger picture is that we are eternal beings. So we can all get very upset when people die. I had a client this morning, her son sadly committed suicide, and but now she understands that this is part of his journey. Part of his journey is to help her actually on her journey to break her patterns. And we found today that this has been going lifetime after lifetime.
Gosh.
So the person's just, this is not reality. And I knew this from being 3 years old. I was like, why is everyone taking this so seriously? This is not reality. This is where everything gets played out. And up there is home. So everyone that we love is up there. I lost my dad 9 years ago. I miss him on the physical every day because I can't phone him up and say, how do I fix this light, for example? Yes. But yes. I know he's around. He shows me every day, you know, that he's around. But it's about just knowing that they're all there. We're all connected. We're all in the same soul families. We are probably billions of years old as souls.
But what is it about this connection? Is it the more you acknowledge the connection, the more that you're supported? Is it like literally being plugged into the national grid? The more that you're aware that we're all connected, then there's plenty for everyone and you never really lose anyone because the soul is energy and energy is never destructed, can never be destructed.
Physics shows us that it can't be destroyed. It can be moved and it can be transformed, but it can't be destroyed. So therefore, in a way, my view is that, you know, I'm not worried about death at all. I quite like not to have to, you know, have indignities and suffering and that sort of thing. But I've never been scared of death, you know.
And actually, you know, Tibetan women and Taoist women, I read a book, I can't remember the title, but he'll come to me in a second, where these women chose to die because they really managed their energy well. And when they did, there was nothing left of the physical body. All the energy was transformed.
Yeah.
And so you don't have to have a drama is what I want to tell our viewers, you know.
Yeah.
You don't have to have an ailing body. You don't, you know, there's so much conditioning about people getting older. And, you know, we also say in Arabic, like having one foot in the grave, you know, and it's your mindset that affects your body and your health. Dawn, I want to kind of move into the core of the subject, which is shamanism. What is a shaman?
As I said before,
I mean, you're the first shaman that I've met. So what is a shaman?
A shaman's a person. Well, shamanism is the first form of first system of belief, first system of healing on the planet. So it's older than religion. It's older than everything, basically. And we all know it because we've all had it at some point. So the shaman historically would be chosen by nature, normally struck by lightning, or it comes down, you know, the family.
Normally struck by lightning?
Mm-hmm. So
even
one of
in
my
ancient times? Gosh.
Well, yeah, more in ancient times than now. Now, I mean, the normal way is to have a vision like I had or to be struck by lightning. A very long, difficult illness, you know, because the suffering is part of the shaman's path. You can't help people unless you've suffered, basically. So the shaman acts on behalf of the community and he is a mediator or she's a mediator between heaven and earth, spirit world and this world, and goes to the spirit world and brings back information for healing for the client. So tells me, for example, what to do, what the client needs, which may not
be. That is only possible because we mustn't assume that, you know, all the viewers know about shamanism. Hi, Barbara, where are you watching from? Let us know. So that is only possible because we are connected and all energy is connected. So for you, it's possible to connect with a different node of energy or level of knowledge because as a shaman, you know how to navigate the energy universe. Is that right? I'm trying to put it in layman's terms so that people can relate to it.
There's three different worlds. So there's the upper world, which is like the superconscious realm. There's this world, the middle world, and then there's the lower world, which is not a hellish type place. It's just another world. And that's normally where soul parts go to for safety. Yes.
Sometimes they go to the lower world?
To the lower world for safety.
So they go to the serpent level?
No, that serpent level is the level of the ego. So it's just a world beneath this world. So, and it's, but it's not a scary place. And so that's when I go to get those segments of the orange back, that's where I have to travel to, basically.
Oh, I see. Really?
So the showman would be there, and the village, if you like, would normally, he'd live on the edge of the village, and he'd be responsible for the health of the village, for the animals, for the crops, for the births, for the deaths, for ceremonies, for marriages, everything.
But my point is, he can only do that if he has a feel and if he's connected to the grid, because, you know, otherwise, how can he communicate with animals and people and know their condition and illnesses if he wasn't? From my point of view,
they get chosen by nature. They get chosen by nature.
Yes, because they're connected to it.
Hit by lightning. Yeah. You know, my teacher said, well, he's actually he was a guide, if you like, that he was struck by lightning, and when he woke
up, I like that story. Can we tell them? Yeah,
he knew everything. He knew all of the how to do the shamanic healing.
Hi, Rula. Thank you for watching. Rula is one of my classmates. We did the holistic healing course. You know, so I'm really happy. So we've got people from Italy, Jordan, UK, Dubai, Patu. I don't know where you're watching from. Let us know. Thank you, guys. Thank you for watching. Yes, sorry to interrupt, but I must honor our viewers.
Of course. No problem. It's wonderful to see all the little messages coming up. So yes, that's basically the shaman's role, to look after the community. But now, of course, with communications, I work worldwide.
Yeah, you work online and you don't even need to see someone. We'll get to that. But I'm really intrigued because you also said that there are two types of shamans. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
In my lineage, so there's two types, what we call the Pampa Messiah, which is normally the more earthy type of shaman. So they might work with animal spirits and herbs. So there might be an ayahuascaro, for example. But they probably using things, people like the reindeer tribe, you know, in Mongolia, that work with the spirit.
Yes, I understand.
The reindeer or the lake. And then there's Altima Psyops, which are quite rare. I'm an Altima Psyop, and they work with higher level spirit. So,
we've got viewers from South Africa, Cape Town. Wow, nice to see you, Tikva. Thanks, Katrina. So you say you work directly with high level spirits. So I understand. So you could be a shaman who works with herbs or plants, but you actually work directly with the level of spirits.
But what an Altima Psyop does is also, I don't know if you remember me telling you that for 5 days before a session, I work on people while they're asleep.
Right. Just, and why is that?
In the old days, do you remember the milk bottles that we used to have? They sit on your doorstep and all of the cream would come to the surface. All of the heaviness in the milk would come to the surface. So basically, I work on people while they're asleep, and that's bringing the cream up to the surface. And in the session, we just kind of skim it off.
So if somebody books a session with you, they don't have to be in England and you don't have to see them, and you can actually work from a distance.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I don't have to speak to them. I mean, I work with severely autistic children anywhere, you know, in the world, and disabled people that can't communicate, and sometimes even people that don't have the language at all. So, for example, with the autistic children, I just have their name. I just do the work. I get all the information that I need, and I just type it all out and I send it to them.
Like, what would you need from a client? Their date of birth and what their issues are, or just their name?
Normally just a name, but it helps if they have something in particular that they want to work on, then it helps me because I can ask those questions. If it's for, let's say, I don't know, self-confidence issues, then I can work towards that. I can focus everything on that. Does that make sense?
Yes, I do. I mean, I understand. And if our viewers don't, please send us questions if anyone would like to ask Dawn a question. So basically what you're saying is shamanism is probably a unique healing modality because you don't need to see the person, you don't need to be connected, you can do the work, you can do the soul retrieval or the shamanic healing, and the person doesn't even have to be present nor speak the language.
True, but and obviously in the cases of, you know, autistic children, they don't have any choice, although they do speak to me, they do give me a lot of information for the parents. But I think that because of the way that I work and giving people opportunity to talk and taking people on the journeys so they can see themselves, the bits of themselves have missed or the patterns that they haven't realized, I think that's quite it's quite healing in itself. So I like
is to there through it. Is there a dark side to shamanism?
There's a dark side to everything, isn't there? You know, if you have a knife, you can have a heart surgeon give you a heart operation with it, or you can have somebody, you know, stab you with it.
Yeah. Okay, so we have a comment from Katrina Dawn, and she is saying, I was told by a Peruvian shaman, I'm 95% shamanic energy. I felt in total alignment in Peru, and she had a life-changing experience. Is that a common thing? I mean, is there, like, can someone tell you have 95% shamanic energy? Or is it she was told that because she was in Peru?
Peru's got very, very high energy, and it's very thin between the veils, between the worlds. So people do tend to have a lot of experiences there. My sense is, and there's a big argument on this, my sense is that shaman are born, not made. So I know that I've been doing this job in many, many different lifetimes, in probably all lifetimes. And it's something that you're born as. So that's probably what the shaman was picking up on. If I have my chart done, my natal chart done, you know, the stars when you're born.
Yes, yes.
People say, are you a shaman?
Really?
It's actually in my stars, you know.
Amazing.
And at the moment, it's quite difficult because there's lots of people kind of doing weekend courses and then saying, I'm a shaman. And
I'm a shaman, yeah.
Not, and it's getting quite popular.
I guess, you know, with energy work, you can learn it, but then there's a calling, and then there's also your soul's experience, whether you've done it before, whether it's your life purpose to do it, whether the wisdom is there as a result of many lifetimes. And I think that makes a difference. But, you know, it sometimes upsets me because there is a commercial side to everything. Even spirituality can be a commercial machine, you know, where you want to certify people and graduate them in shamanism or tarot readings or whatever it is. But because you're dealing with very high level energies, integrity is a must. And, you know, I don't give my endorsement to anyone unless I've tried them for many years. I know how they work. How they deal with it, because if there is no integrity, you're dealing with high level energies that you can actually cause somebody a problem rather than heal them. I've had so many people who were disturbed because they didn't have a proper form of whatever, you know, bioenergy healing or Reiki healing or whatever it is, because they've been kind of experimented on.
Yes, absolutely. I think what I say to clients is that they always have, if you're going to go and see somebody, you must always trust your gut. You know, always trust your gut. And if it doesn't feel right, just go.
You have a question. That's why I'm quoting, yeah? Fatou, Fathala is asking, is your shamanism like Castaneda?
Well, I think the thing is that there's many different lineages of shamanism because it's the first peoples of the earth. So all shamanism has the same basis. It has the three worlds. They might just use different powers, like reindeer or lakes or a mountain. Or does that make sense? It's all the same principles.
Yeah, it's kind of like it depends what your lineage is. And I didn't get into Castaneda's books very much, you know, but somehow I resonate with the Peruvian, but especially your people, like Hiro, you know, like I could understand or feel, although I knew nothing about Peru and the Hiro tribe.
Yeah, they're amazing, the people in Peru. They're so powerful, but they're like little children, you know, when they're working, they're serious. When they're not working, they're doing like cartwheels and forward rolls on the lawn, and you're kind of like, okay, you know, but it's, they just don't take themselves seriously. And as you said, there's a lot of ego now in spirituality. You know, I'm more enlightened, yes, than you, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And that's quite sad. But then that happens in...
Very sad. Or like, you know, protecting your methodology and it's a secret. And I think, you know, this life, as I call it, is like the national grid. You need to give and receive. And the more that you're connected, the more that will come to you. But yeah, very few people, yeah, understand that. You know, like I promote you, I promote her, I promote him, because it all comes back. And if you work from a place of integrity, then you would welcome that kind of connection.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, viewers, yeah, any more questions? We've got 10 minutes left. You know, when you've worked as a healer for a very long time, and I've worked as an intuitive and a mentor for more than 25 years, and, you know, you're just sitting behind a desk or a table and, you know, working with clients, whether online or in person, there are no career lines. We kind of have to make our own.
Yeah.
You know, there is no guidance. But let me ask you, where do you see yourself 5 years from now? What do you hope to create?
I can't believe you asked that. Who knows? Who knows? I think that, you know, I just feel really blessed. Lena's on. Hi, Lena. I just feel really blessed to be able to do this work and to...
Because you're writing
part
a book.
Of it for,
you're writing a book. You're an amazing interior designer. And I have to tell everybody, you're an amazing landscape designer. You have the most amazing gardens, the most amazing home. And it comes kind of with that sense of intuition, doesn't it? You know, like you have a sense of where things should be and how they should look. Like Katrina, who's my next guest, seems to think my background is messy, but I love it. That's my space. And I love to get things. But you're working on a book. And what else? What would you hope to do? I mean, let's have fun, you know, let's finish what we came here to do. So what do you have on your to-do list for this lifetime?
Well, I would really, I'm really interested in, you know, helping people that, for example, you know, the military that struggle with PTSD. I think shamanic healing is
brilliant.
Fantastic.
Can really
that
help.
It would be nice. Mm-hmm. Get some more research done into that, and I'm looking at that as a possibility. I am writing a novel based on a true story, which I'm quite passionate about. Obviously, I have my book here, which is
still doing really well
since 2012. I think we've got 50 nice reviews now, and it's lovely to get, you know, messages about that as well from all over the world.
But
your book.
Wait, don't kind of brush over your book. Your book is really important because not only because it's written from the heart, but you write about yourself, your journey, how you've dealt with all these mystical things that were happening to you. You mention a lot of client cases, why their dis-ease have developed, how you've helped them. So in a way, it's almost like a manual of how to handle life or how to pick up the signs and recognize that something about you or your energies are discordant and it's not the end of life. There are people who can help you deal with it in a natural way before you wait too long and then it really becomes a problem.
That's it. I think it's, I call it a helping hand on your journey through life, because I've been on this journey a very long time. I think since I was 3, really, started asking questions. And I've fallen in many, many pit holes. And I see clients going into the same pit holes. So I thought if I put them all in a book, then to some degree, I think people have to go into the pitfalls to learn from them themselves. But then effectively, hopefully people can walk around them and kind of go, oh, I can see what's happening here, and they can walk around them and or not spend so long. I mean, I spend so long looking for this path and reading thousands of books and getting really frustrated, and
you wanted to find a system that works and
I
this
did.
Does
it work well. I mean, lots of healing modalities for me, they're like putting nice energy onto a rubbish tip, and the person feels nice for 3 or 4 days, but then all of the supermarket trolleys are, you know, pushing up, for example, and the exhaust pipes. And I wanted to find something that remove the rubbish tip and then put the light in and then return them to wholeness. And but, that's why I love this work, because it, you know, if we're traumatized, Sahar, we're traumatized on all levels of our being, and all of those levels have to be healed.
Absolutely. Otherwise, you'll be carrying the emotional baggage with you. She gave you a very nice comment about your book. Elizabeth says that Dawn's book was a great help to me and her healing sessions. Thank you, Elizabeth. But also, Dawn, you took time out and you did your master's. You went back to university. And what was that about? What do you hope to do with this?
Oh, I'd like you, to Lena. Take the Thank work. Thanks, Lena. I want to take the work into business, because I think there's an awful lot of dysfunction at high levels, CEO level, C-suite level. And the business has such an impact on the population and the earth, you know, the environment. So if we can raise consciousness and heal these leaders to be and help them to become better leaders and more conscious leaders, then all of the stakeholders involved in the business, the workers, the society around the business, the suppliers, the customers, the products, you know, that are better. And they're not putting toxins in rivers and using bubble bags and things, then I think so much the better.
I think capitalism maybe went to an extreme, you know, where greed kind of really set in at the expense of the planet and its people. I mean, for me, when I communicate, you know, with Mother Earth, it's very obvious. We're almost like parasites living off of her rather than we own her and we have to exploit her. But you know what? A friend of ours from Dubai went to Stanford to do her master's, and her master's is absolutely amazing. I mean, when she talks about it, when she came to visit, it's almost like she's in a holistic course, you know? So I think mainstream universities began to teach that kind of awareness and build those kind of leadership, you know, this kind of leadership. I mean, absolutely incredible, you know?
Sorry, my university, Nottingham Trent University, had a very big focus on the environment and ethics, you know, and so it was great to do the MBA with them. But I think it's important, you know, and we have all of this stuff about, you know, shamanism really is about looking after the earth. If you look after the people love themselves, the people are going to love everybody else, because you can't love people if you don't love yourself, and you can't love the earth if you don't love yourself. So
there's a comment from Zakia in Canada. She says, good luck with that, Dawn. CEOs are selected according to their sociopathic tendencies. Yeah, we know all about that.